Hi, my name is Nathaniel Ian Miller, and I'm here to talk about my new book, Red Dog Farm.
Nathaniel Ian Miller's sophomore novel, Red Dog Farm, is set in Iceland. It follows a year of Ori's life after he leaves university to return to his family farm. I recently spoke with Nathaniel Ian Miller about Ori's relationship with his father, who is resistant to change, and how he accidentally wrote a second book set in a cold and remote environment. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Nathaniel Ian Miller. So can you give our listeners a description of Red Dog Farm?
Sure. It's essentially a year in the life of a small family farm in southwestern Iceland, present day, as opposed to the last book.
Now, I did see that you included a pronunciation guide in the back of the book, but fair warning, you will still have to help me along the way because I'm bad at English.
Hey, Beth, I think that I'm going to need to be correct. That pronunciation guide is as much for me as anyone else. I'm really bungling it. I just got to listen to the audiobook, which is read by my favorite Icelandic actor, and Dari Ólafsson. He's the one who read The Memoirs of Stockholm Sven. And it was like I was hearing most of these words for the first time, really, because I had no idea they sounded like that. And it was a pleasure, but not one I can replicate.
So we spoke in 2021 about the release of your debut, The Memoirs of Stockholm Sven. And Sven was a man who gave up his life in Stockholm to live in the Arctic. And Red Dog Farm takes place in Iceland. And this is your second novel set in a very cold and remote setting. Talk to me about the importance of setting and what draws you to these locales.
Sure. Well, first, I would just say that I had no intention of writing about or doing research in another cold place. I live in a cold place. The wind is literally blowing these blinding squalls past my window right now. But anyway, yes, I thought I would write about a warm place. It was not my intention to write another cold book with warm people, but setting is key for me. I am not one of these writers with the kind of creative imagination to bring a place to life just from thin air. I need to be on the ground first. I need to take a million notes and photographs. If I don't, I really have little to work with. And I think that comes from my past as a nature writer, where that was, you know, the first thing I did was sort of observe the place, the setting, take it in, and use that to ground the work. And I think I'm still doing that to a certain degree.
So I would like to talk about Ori's relationship with his father, Poppy. Poppy has never really allowed Ori to work on the family farm, but begins to lean on Ori more after he leaves his first year at university. Can you talk a bit about their father-son relationship? Because this dynamic feels like one that we don't really read as often about in literature, the father-son relationship.
Sure. I mean, I think in some ways it's unique. Well, no relationship is really unique, but and my parents, if they listen to this, are going to kill me for modifying the word unique. It's one of their pet peeves when anyone says anything is blank unique. But anyway, what makes their relationship different, I suppose, is that it's coming from a place of deep love and I think respect. But, you know, the father, not only is he in a state of increasing depression and ambivalence throughout this book, but he's somewhat emotionally shut down in general. And so he's not the most communicative, and there's a push and pull there. And I think he has tried to insulate his son, Poppy has, from the harsher realities of farming, while at the same time hoping that Ori will grow to love the place. And, you know, I think when Ori goes off to university, Poppy probably accepts that as an inevitability. Kids go off, they do their own thing. This is a sort of classic scenario on farms, and it's something I talk about in the book. expectations for farm kids? You know, what are they going to do? Are they going to miss home? Are they going to just light it out for the big city and never look back? Or are they going to get a little nostalgic and miss the farm life? And that's really what the book is about, Ori finding his way back to farm life in spite of his father having kept the cold, hard truths of farming at a distance from Ori. So Ori has to sort of learn about it over the course of this year and decide whether or not it appeals to him.
Would your parents accept singularly unique?
No, they would be tearing their hair
Okay,
out.
so you now live on a farm with your family in a
Yes.
cold location. How much of your own farming experience went into writing this book?
Very great deal. And farming was not something that I ever thought I would wish to write about. You know, we raised beef cattle here for about 10 years. I recently have sold them and we're still on the farm, obviously, and I'm making hay and doing various things, but we don't have livestock anymore at the moment. And yeah, so people often would say, well, why don't you write about farming? You know, and when you're doing it, it's the last thing you want to write about, you know, the last thing you want to think about. You're thinking about it all the time. And I thought, well, haven't enough books been written about farming? And the way I came to be more accepting of it as a sort of useful material is I was on a trip to Iceland, just a vacation with my family, with my parents and my wife and son. And I'm looking around, and we were in farm country, and just marveling at how similar their agricultural practices are to Vermont's agricultural practice. And Vermont is, I'm gonna go with somewhat unique in that its practices, by necessity, because of the weather here, the climate, are more Northern European style in terms of how we have to put up the hay and wrap bales and things like that. And obviously, this is not the most interesting premise, but that set my mind thinking about various story ideas and what I began to think about what I could potentially bring to a story in terms of my own myriad experiences on the farm, some banal and everyday, but some kind of harrowing and interesting. And many of those found their way into the book.
So, can you talk to me about the ideas of new farming versus old farming, and also why Poppy was so reluctant to change his ways and so dismissive of new ideas?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think one of the contradictions of Poppy as a character is that he hates the old way. He's sort of defined himself in opposition to the old ways of farming. And I mean that in just the most general sense, in terms of I'm not talking about a pre-mechanized style of farming, which is something that I deal with a little bit in this book. But because Iceland was sort of late to modernize in that respect, I just mean in terms of it's something farmers talk about, the old ways of doing things, and those who do things the old way valorize it. You know, this it's the only way. It worked for my grandfather, it worked for his grandfather, and therefore I'm going to keep doing it. And sometimes, often, those ways are not the most considerate of animals or of your family. It's sort of, it can be a kind of single-minded focus on production. Obviously, you see that in agribusiness for sure. But in just in terms of the family farm, we've learned some things about humane treatment and that sort of thing that could stand to be brought into the modern world in a good way. And I do think Puppy signs on to all that stuff. It's just that he is himself a deeply stubborn individual. And so he's developed his own way. He's a contrarian of sorts, almost a pariah in his farming community because of the choices he's made, but he's also not going to change. So I don't know. It's something that's explored at length in the book is his willingness to change and how slow it is to happen, but inexorably.
So the novel begins by describing the Icelandic paradox, describing the stubborn nature, the alterationist instead of adaptation of place and people. And late in the book, Poppy was telling his son Ori about his past, the summer alone tending sheep, how the entire island evacuated when a volcano erupted. Nothing frantic, just calm. This Icelandic paradox. Did this life create a stoic people? And also because of like the cold and dark conditions, is the depression rate higher in Iceland?
I could never be an expert on this matter. And so my opinion is only that. But I think I certainly can't, well, let's just say I can't answer that question. I don't know the rates of depression in Iceland or that type of thing as opposed to other countries. Certainly you hear about that in terms of countries where it's colder and darker. You hear about things like that in Finland, for example. I've never heard about rates for Iceland. I was trying to play in the book with cultural stereotypes that Icelanders might put upon themselves. It's something I like to do in Sven as well. Have characters or the narrator toy with these sort of cultural generalizations that by and large prove false, in that you might think of yourself as a stoic people because of things that have happened, but you stack your experiences against anyone else's, and everyone has trials, no matter where they live, that bring out hardiness in some and not in others. And I guess if the book is about anything other than farming and family and love, it's about the ways in which what might seem like a very particular, hyper-specific experience is in fact, the norm worldwide.
I want to move on to the opposite of depression, dogs. Dogs played a prominent role in Stockholm Sven and, of course, in Red Dog Farm. When we last spoke, you commented that you loved writing about dogs, and I follow you on Instagram and I see you posting about your own dog. When writing, do you set out to include dogs or does it just happen organically?
I would say it happens organically. I'm always thinking about dogs. It's maybe too often. It doesn't always happen organically, and sometimes I find myself trying to make it happen. For example, the novel I'm writing right now, which I don't really want to give anything away about, it just is counterintuitive for there to be dogs in it. And here I am, 70,000 words into the thing and still trying to find a way to write a dog into the damn thing. And maybe I'll find a way, maybe I won't. It's not happening organically, we'll say that. But yes, generally, if it's just people having sort of their normal, going about their normal lives, I figure there's got to be dogs around. Whenever I'm watching TV and or a movie or something like that, and it's taking place some sort of normal situation, normal setting, I'm always looking around for the dog. Why? I understand you got to cast the dog and there's got to be a trainer and this and that, but come on. I mean, there should be a dog in this house. There should be a dog running around this farm. And I always feel like something is missing when there isn't. So, yes, there's always got to be one in anything I write. And in this book, the dog, his name is Riku, is an Australian Kelpie, another strange choice that Poppy has made. I kind of doubt there's a single Australian Kelpie in Iceland for real. I hope someone will prove me wrong. But the dog is a she in this book and certainly bears some similarities to my old dog, Bonaparte. who is not a Kelpie, is a mostly a healer, but the Kelpie seemed right for the role.
You mentioned this earlier, but I saw where you posted on Instagram a sample of the audiobook. Can you talk about what an actor can bring to the experience of reading besides saying all the names right?
And that is important. Absolutely. So, I mean, just briefly, and maybe we talked about this last time, but I'm obsessed with audiobooks, and for that reason, very particular about the audiobook readers, and they can elevate mediocre material and they can take good material and make it transcendent, of course. And so it's about breathing life into characters and so much more than that. I'm not even sure I can articulate how they do what they do. It's a totally different experience from reading a book. I love both, but I'm a slow reader. I tend to circle back on sentences over and over and over again and pick them apart and admire them or criticize them. And when I'm listening, I'm swept away. It's an experience. Even if I space out for a minute or two, it's still I'm in the experience. I feel things somehow more deeply, and that's what a truly magnificent performance can do. And I don't mean in terms of different voices for the different characters. I tend to not like that very much. I prefer a kind of steady, almost monotone. But with Sven, debut novelists are not given choices about their audiobook readers. This is, you might, if you're lucky, you're going to get a list of five readers from some either contracted outfit or an in-house group, and you might choose one of those five. And if you don't like any of them, too bad, you're getting one of them. And a lot of writer friends have had pretty bad experiences with that because, it wasn't ideal. So, despite me having gone through that production process in more or less a deferential posture, I had this idea that I wanted Sven to be read by this Icelandic actor, Ólafur Darri Ólafsson. And I didn't know him or wasn't connected with him in any way whatsoever, but something about his voice on the screen, which was such a booming, shaking bass, you could feel it in your chest, but full of gravitas and pathos. I had this dream of him reading Sven, waged this crazy letter writing campaign, emails, long lists of why he was the perfect audiobook reader, till I think people got so tired of dealing with me, and they're like, let's let this guy shoot his shot. And I was able to get in touch with his voice agent. And long story short, that ended up happening. We then became friends over the course of that process, have stayed in touch. He helped me tremendously with this writing project, essentially fixing, every contact on the ground in Iceland for my research trip. Anybody I needed to talk to, he knows everybody. It was magnificent. And so it just seemed like the obvious choice. Not to say I didn't have to do another little letter writing campaign, which I did, but for him to read Red Dog Farm. And I just got to hear it this week. And I couldn't be more thrilled with the way he just breathes life into these characters and so much empathy. And you can't get that always with just any reader or with just the voice in your own head.
Since we spoke last, my sisters and I opened a liquor store in my dad's old barbershop. And so
Good.
lately I've been like reading a book and trying to figure out if I should pair it with some drink. And all of the liquor you mentioned sounded awful. But I have Reyka vodka, R-E-Y-K-A-A, I think.
Sure.
I do have a bottle of that at home, so I might just be pouring that.
No, Reka is delicious. And they have a number of good vodkas there, of course. And yeah, you're mentioning, I think, brennivín, which is the Icelandic liquor. It's this sort of, it's like aquavit, it's caraway-ish, which I'm not into, nor are most of the characters in this book. but it's got some weird mosses and it's for a certain kind of taste. And I, boy, that's cool about you opening a liquor store. I worked in a liquor store once for quite some time. The only downside for me at, when I worked in one was that I had been away, I'd moved away after school and whatnot, and I'd been to college, and I came back home for one reason or another at loose ends and for a period, and got a job at this liquor store, which happened to be across the street from my high school. The only sad part about that, other than the fact that there I am back at home looking at my old high school, is that people I knew and their parents would come in to shop there, and there would be this always this conversation. Oh, Nathaniel, what are you up to these days? Well, here I am, working in the liquor store across from the high school.
Well, the book is Red Dog Farm. Nathaniel Ian Miller, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you, Beth. It was a pleasure.
That was Nathaniel Ian Miller, author of the book Red Dog Farm, which was published by Little Brown. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.